Joining us now, day-to-day senior producer Steve Proffitt. He's here to help share some of your emails.
And great to have you here on our program, Farai. Let's start with a comment on a story we aired Friday on the 200th anniversary of the birth of Joseph Smith, founder of the Mormon Church.
Jeffrey Nagel listens to us in Oregon, and he was upset with the report. He writes, instead of celebrating Joseph Smith's legacy, you found Mormons who were happy to rip on Smith and the church.
Mr. Nagel concludes, I expect religion to be addressed with sensitivity and tact by NPR. Praise, though, for Alex Chadwick's conversations with folks getting out of the Los Angeles County Jail. That story ran last Friday.
It was, writes Corbin Hairsnape of Cary, North Carolina, neither sympathetic nor critical. And he continues, thank you for this unhistorionic piece, an auditory masterpiece.
Criticism and corrections regarding a story we ran Thursday on some who detect an undercurrent of racism in the film King Kong.
Steve Beiske of Princeton, New Jersey wrote this. Your reporter said repeatedly that the new version of King Kong moved the story from Africa to the South Seas Islands.
And Mr. Beiske directed us to the 1933 original. At about 22 minutes into the movie, it reveals the location of Skull Island.
There's our known position. 2 south, 90 east.
Way west of Sumatra.
And way out of any waters I know. I know the East Indies like I do my own hand, but I've never been here.
And thank you to Mr. Beiske for that cinematic correction.
But there's more about this story on King Kong. What a one-sided report. This from Steve Dawson in Kansas City. He writes, why didn't NPR attempt to contact the makers of the movie for their response to the accusations of racism?
And Sam Connect of Wichita, Kansas says, I strongly suspect that when King Kong is made again in 20 years, it will either feature a black heroine or an albino ape.
A lot of you wrote in about a two-part series we aired last week on an adopted boy from Guatemala and his American parents who took him back to meet his birth family.
Diego's story was an emotional one. He met his birth mother, his brothers and sisters, and he learned a terrible truth that one of his sisters had not died from illness, but in fact, his birth father had flown into a rage and killed her. Here's a section from that story. Diego's adopted parents are trying to help him understand this terrible crime.
Are you being sad now, Diego? Okay.
It's okay to be sad.
It's okay. I think it's...
Many, many listeners said they cried along with Diego.
From Los Angeles, Patrick Yeager said, to hear the genuine sadness and love expressed through that little boy moved me to tears.
And listener Jake Stillman, please let Diego know that there are many Americans who are honored and happy to have him a part of our hearts and our country.
But other listeners were critical of Diego's adoptive parents. I was appalled, wrote Thomas O'Farrell of Westfield, Indiana.
Appalled, he says, that any adoptive parent would subject a 6-year-old boy to the kind of emotional deluge that Diego experienced in being confronted with his birth family and its secrets.
Finally, an update. Last week we aired a story about the 100th birthday of explorer Norman Vaughan. He was the last surviving member of Admiral Richard Byrd's historic expedition to the South Pole in the late 1920s.
In that piece, Vaughan remembered the day he first ran his dog sled to take Byrd to the base camp.
Imagine the thrill I got that night when we put up our tents and I slept in the same tent with Admiral Byrd. I was nothing but a kid at college, and it was marvelous.
And Farai, over the holiday weekend, we learned that we'd lost this great adventurer. Norman Vaughan died Friday, just 4 days after his 100th birthday. Thanks now to all of you who wrote in. Keep sending us your comments, your suggestions, and your corrections.
Just go to our website, npr.org, and click on the Contact Us link. It's at the top of every page. And thanks for your help, NPR's Steve Proffitt.
You're welcome.